Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to the last Situation Fluxus for 2021 on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. For this last show, there will be no headlines. The reason being is that with the new COVID-19 mandates throughout our country, everything we do and have planned is in a state of flux. No pun intended. I was prepared to mention the upcoming events in New York City next month, but many have canceled their in-person presentations and performances. Global Fest. Though NPR will still present Tiny Desk Meets Global Fest January 18th through the 20th on their YouTube channel, APAP, the Association of Performing Arts Professionals, has, quote, moved all their activities online, and the Winter Jazz Festival has postponed most in-person events. So if you're planning to attend any event, number one, make sure it's still happening, and number two, educate yourself on the event's COVID-19 protocols. Be safe out there, everyone. My guests are Lithuanian-born and New York City-based vocalist, composer, and Lithuanian zither player Simona Smirnova, and New York City-based saxophonist and composer Berta Moreno. Their upcoming gig on Thursday, January 13th of next year, titled Bird Language, is at Chelsea Table and Stage. As of today, Tuesday, December 28th, this event is scheduled to go on. With changing COVID-19 mandates throughout the country, please check to make sure that this event is happening, and if it is, to educate yourself on the event's COVID-19 protocols. So I'd like to thank you both for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes. You two are preparing for Bird Language at Chelsea Table and Stage on Thursday, January 13th of next year. The venue offers intimate settings for performances. Which one will you be in?
I think we are in the main stage where we have the stage with a baby grand piano and the setting around like a theater.
So in offering such a unique performance experience, the choice in a venue is key, yes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Why this spot? Are either of you familiar with it?
We never had a chance to perform in this venue before because it's a relatively new venue in New York City. But I've seen many colleagues and friends performing there, and they had very good experience. And I feel like it's a good combination of a venue where jazz can sound good and classical music can sound good. And so since Bird Language is a acoustic act where we use piano a lot, we use double bass, we use drums, and we will have even strings and saxophone and voice and zither. So it's a very acoustic type of show, which I think that this venue is perfect because it has an acoustic piano and it has this intimate and classy vibe, which we're kind of looking for.
Yes. And Simona, the zither that you're playing, it has a particular name in Lithuania, correct?
That's correct. It's called Kanklis.
I'm really excited about playing there because I saw it relatively like not long ago because it's a really new venue. And I was checking I didn't have the chance to be there in person, but I was checking in the website, like the photos and the atmosphere. And I thought it was really, really cool. And I'm really looking forward to playing new venues. Like after this pandemic, I think we got all really creative in terms of looking for alternative places to play and to show our music, either even in our neighborhood, community, gatherings, new venues that we didn't think, it was possible before. So I'm really excited to get to a new venue like this.
Your third release due out in April of next year, Joan of Arc for String Quartet, is original music for a 1928 silent film. Would you please let us into your writing process for the film, The Passion of Joan of Arc?
Yes, The Passion of Joan of Arc. So this Joan of Arc was my second album. I released in 2020, December 30th. So about a year ago, Joan of Arc. I composed that score as a live string quartet score for the movie. So we would show it live. We would screen the movie and I would conduct the string quartet real time. And then when the pandemic hit, then I decided to adjust the score and record it as an independent record and have the score in an album format. Now in the upcoming April 2022, we will have the new album, my third album, Bird Language. So this will be the new act.
Berta Tumaini. Mm-hmm. Which translates into hope in Swahili.
Yes.
It's your release from earlier this year on Tiger Turn Records. Mm-hmm. Again, another release with all original music inspired by your time spent in Kenya. Aesthetically, what aspects of Kenyan music and life aligned with yours and influenced this release?
Okay, so the main influence for this release was not that much the music from Kenya, but the personal experience I had being with the people there. So it was more like a personal experience I wanted to translate into music. And I was working as a volunteer musician in 2016. I went there to work in Kawangare. It's one of the poorest, more disadvantaged neighborhoods. And I was just spending days with kids from a community center, and they really changed my life. I was there just like learning from them, admiring like the way of life and how they deal with the challenges in life, the situations they are like facing every day, and how much community life they are like, you know, like they have there and how much they support each other. They have nothing, and even they have nothing, they share it with each other. So for me, it was a life lesson. I was like, I don't know, I just love them so much. They taught me so many things, and I came back to New York and I thought I needed to write music about the experience and also let people know that those people are there and they're amazing and we should learn from them. So I wanted to create the whole album with original music, and it's kind of a mix between jazz, which is what I normally do, and a little bit of African touch, but it is not really like Kenyan music. So I was investigating and learning about different styles of of African music and the approach to it, some rhythms and some bass lines. And I tried to combine all of that together. So I didn't want to make it like African music because, of course, who I am to do that. But I wanted to really put my experience there and my time shared with them. And you know, that I tried to do something really personal.
Future plans to return?
I wish I could. I'm really looking forward to come back. I have to find a moment because it's not easy at the moment. I just became a new mom. So now everything is difficult with a baby.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. But I really want to come back and meet them again. And, you know, it will be amazing.
All right. Now I have a question for you two. Have you felt pigeonholed by your gender or by your, and I'm using air quotes here, multicultural ensembles? Was there a situation where you sensed you were hired because of one or two of these was the deciding factor and not for your artistry?
I don't think I've had experience like that in terms of my last name or my cultural background. I think I've experienced more curiosity because I play a folkloric instrument, so people would ask more about the instrument and the origins of the instrument. But I, in terms of booking and venues, I did experience more of a interest of just how many people could you bring and not that much interest into the music we are creating. So I've had experience of people more like, how big is your crowd? How many people can you bring? Not about cultural background and not about the music you actually perform, but more of a what's the crowd you can bring in. That's what I've experienced here locally. So from more of a negative or critical side. And in terms of cultural aspect, I've had only positive experiences because I do feel worthy of performing. And I do think that we have something to bring to the table and offer. And I do feel proud of presenting a ethnic and very unique instrument in this multicultural palette of musicians and the venues we have in New York City. So that's my take on it. And these are my experiences. So I think, like, in a nutshell, I think that mostly what I experienced, that people would more interested in how many people would you bring rather than your cultural background.
Berta.
Well, this is like a lot to say. In terms of cultural background and multicultural project or music, I didn't feel, well, I'm in a difficult spot myself. I always feel like I'm kind of in the middle because I'm from Spain and somehow everyone expects me to play flamenco or some kind of flamenco jazz kind of thing. And, you know, I love flamenco. It's amazing. I love it. I listen to it, but not everyone from Spain, just because we are from Spain, we really have a deep knowledge of what this complex music is. So you really need to study it. And I chose to study something else. I went for jazz. And I always find myself in a spot that, like, you know, I'm Spanish, I don't play flamenco, then I'm not really offering something that people want to listen, but they don't even care to listen what I do. And you know, it's a difficult spot to be like a Spanish girl playing jazz. And I thought this last album, because it kind of has a little of multicultural approach to it a little bit, will help me, but somehow I didn't feel the difference. So I think it's really like random sometimes, and I do feel they sometimes, like Simona says, don't really care about the music but other external aspects. And you know, that's how I feel. Being a woman, sometimes I experience they call me because I'm a woman, which makes me feel weird because it's just like, yeah, we need a female saxophone player. I know, you know, like, I think I understand and I take those chances because I take every chance to play every time the chance is like I can keep my integrity and everything, right? So I think every opportunity to play is a good one and I welcome it. But I think the goal here is like, they don't need a female saxophone player. They just need a saxophone player. And hopefully they listen to you and they need you. for whatever you are bringing to the music. But I understand we are now in a moment that things are changing, hopefully, and this path, you know, I think it's a good thing that people try to get more women in bands, and you know, like the way to arrive to the goal in which does we wouldn't even speak about gender anymore. So
yeah. I'm waiting for that day.
Me too. I think it should happen.
Yeah. All right, ladies, let's get back to the gig. What can your audience expect when they come to your January 13th performance at Chelsea Table and Stage in New York City?
So Bird Language is an act which combines jazz and Lithuanian folk music. So people, when they come, they can expect hearing something what sounds like jazz with influences from other cultures. And if people are not familiar with Baltic region and folkloric music from Eastern Europe, it's very melodic, it's catchy, and it has this chant-like quality. And I like to dive and lean into this aesthetic of using this mysterious spell, casting, chant-like aesthetic where you repeat certain chants from folkloric music and incorporating into jazz harmony and rhythms. So we will have a lot of improvisation as well. So people who love improvised music, that's the show. We have Berta on saxophone improvising. We have wonderful musicians, Kaylee O'Doherty on piano and Maxime Chollet on drums and Maxime Perepelica on bass. They are all wonderful musicians and improvisers. And we also have a guest duet, Arkai, a cellist and a violinist. And we'll have a whole different arrangement with strings for Lithuanian folkloric music. So I think it's wonderful for people who like something a little bit exotic and different, but also who like improvised music and jazz.
Well, and I want to say also, Simona is an amazing band leader. So she has created such a family out of this band. We have been working together, having dinners together, rehearsing, and it really feels like a family. And I think people in the audience for sure are going to feel that, and are going to feel like that, you know, community approach, that party approach, and we want to be there having fun and bringing fun to whoever is in front. So,
oh, sorry, can I just say one more thing? Yes, Berta brought the, I guess I forgot one more aspect. What Berta brought is that the approach of performing is very different sometimes. Jazz musicians, some of jazz musicians prefer leaning just into musical aspect and just really trying to explore improvisational language. While my approach is more, I guess, coming from more pop culture, because I do try to incorporate audience. Audience is invited to sing with me certain lines, and I trying to be very entertaining and sometimes a little goofy, say a joke and do something. So I engage and bring that, what Berta said, that family aspect, the community aspect into the venue or hall.
And how did you two meet? Sounds like you've had fun over dinner. So how did you two meet?
Well, I'm from Lithuania, and my educational background started in Lithuania at the Lithuanian Academy of Music and Theater. I studied jazz, vocals in jazz department. And that's the time where I met Maxime, the bass player who was studying bass at the time. And then Maxime left overseas to study. And we haven't seen each other in a while. And then I moved to the US to study at Berklee College of Music. And Maxime came with Berta. And Berta was the wife of Maxime. So the bass player is husband of Berta. And through Maxime, I met Berta. And we became instantly friends. And I've just seen Berta working so hard and putting her own records and leading a band. And I feel like we both, as band leaders, as composers, and as same age women in New York City, we have so many things in common, and we try to support each other and play together and invite each other to each other's projects and just socialize. So all these things, really nice to have in New York City.
Yes.
So ladies, as we come to the end of this interview, Is there a question I didn't ask you? Is there something you'd like us to know as we come into the new year?
I guess I just want to say, because we briefly touched on Joan of Arc release, so just want to restate that the music we're going to be performing, it's absolutely new act, which is just freshly recorded and mastered. And the music, what people will hear, it's unheard and will be officially released in April. So what they will hear in Chelsea Table and Stage will become an album, a physical CD, a physical vinyl, and a digital release in April. So just wanted to say that.
For me, I don't know, go more to see live shows, support artists, and give us some love, and, you know, yeah, be nice.
For more information, SimonaSmirnova.nyc, BertaMoreno.com, and for information for their performance at Chelsea Table and Stage, ChelseaTableandStage.venuetix.com. And now for some music. Organist, pianist, composer, and educator hailing from Louisville, Kentucky, Kendall Carter. From his debut release, Introducing Kendall Carter, on his own Ladneck Music, we heard Punjab Affair. According to his website, when he's not on the road, he can be found steadily playing solo piano 5 nights a week at the Pine Room Restaurant in Kentucky. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, feedback@wgxc.org, or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Our website is wgxc.org. My interview is with multi-award-winning and world-renowned audio engineers Jim Anderson and Ulrika Schwartz. They own and operate Anderson Audio New York, located in Brooklyn, New York. Their work on vocalist and pianist Patricia Barber's 2021 release, Click, on Impex Records, has received a Grammy nomination for Best Immersive Audio Album. The 64th Annual Grammy Awards is scheduled for January 31st of next year. So, thank you both for joining me here on Situation Fluxus. A number of artists who you've worked with, I've interviewed, most recently soprano saxophonist Jane Ira Bloom and vocalist and pianist Patricia Barber. Mm-hmm. Your work on Miss Barber's release of this year, Click, has been nominated for a Grammy for Best Immersion Audio Album. You've collaborated with these two on repeat occasions, but I'd like to focus on Miss Barber's release. What has been your approach in crafting the quality of her sound over the course of several recordings?
Several recordings goes to about, I think it's now what, 15 recordings, I think. It's every recording, I think, since 1989. The first one I did with her was called A Distortion of Love, and then Cafe Blue and Modern Cool and on and on and on. And the one thing that we've always tried to do is to look at whatever kind of technically is going on at the moment and try to say, let's do the best we can with what the tools we have. And so with that, when it came to recording Patricia's last couple of albums, Higher and Click, that... I went to my wife Ulrika, and she's a wonderful recording engineer herself and producer, and she's very well versed in super high resolution audio, and I said, you know, what can we do to make this state of the art today? And it was her suggestion that we start working with in a very high resolution DXD, and that is recorded at, I'll get very technical now, at 352.8 kilohertz with a 32-bit floating point. I mean, it's what is that? How many times the resolution of a CD, Ulrika?
256.
So It's pretty incredible. And so we recorded the original tracks in this format. We actually had a double format going. So I recorded Patty's record the same way I would record it for the last 30 years. But in the background, Ulrika was back there with a laptop that she had built. Wow. That was able to record 64 channels at this resolution. And we could put it in a little suitcase and put it in the overhead of the plane. And so we waltzed it out there in January of 2019, which was one of the coldest days of the year. And we were out there for a week recording with her. And we had recorded Higher. We expected it would take a few days. And actually, we got through it pretty quickly. The band was really nicely rehearsed. And so we had everything done. And at that point, Patty said, "What should we do?" I said, "Let's just keep recording. You know, you've got a great band. We've got the studio. We've got all everything here." And I said, "Why don't we just record all the songs that people have ever asked you to play at, as an encore, or just requests?" And they kind of hunkered down in the corner for about a half an hour and wrote a bunch of tunes down. And then for the next 2 days, we just recorded all these songs that basically became Click. And it has this wonderfully relaxed feeling about it. You know, I think all the pressure and the tension was off of getting what we were out there to do. And now we're just having fun. And I think it really comes across in the record. And so what we did, we mix at Skywalker Sound out in California. And so we took out Ulrika's laptop. And we had a few things that kind of really made this recording special, where the Ulrika had arranged with Merging Technologies to get this very fancy clock system that they have. And clocking is very important when it comes to digital recordings, because what you try to do is get this playback exactly in line at the time that it was recorded, because you're taking little teeny pictures and you want each picture to come up exactly at the right time. So the stability of the sound is just first rate. So really, Ulrika was the technical genius behind this recording. I just kind of recorded and mixed it, and that was about it. So,
Ulrika, would you like to add to that?
Well, I mean, it's basically what it was. It's just I have done, I did about 15 years of immersive recording in Germany before I moved to the US. And we have always had these, digital boards and have done a lot more work in digital, while the Americans always went back to their analog boards for to get a specific sound. I was involved in broadcast, and we had to, you know, turn around things extremely fast. And, you know, somebody would do a recording of a 90-piece orchestra in the morning, and I would come in and do it in the afternoon. So we just had to have these other recall features. So that's why I've spent so much time working on improving digital systems, and clocking turned out to be one of those things where you can really make a big difference, especially in big systems. And now we just put both together. Like, we put the analog and the digital on the highest quality together, and I think that worked out really nicely.
You know, in addition, audio engineering is really a matter of detail. I mean, really paying attention to every detail along the way. And so we've done all kinds of things. Like we have friends up in Detroit.
Right. We also exchanged every power cable that was in the room, and we kind of exchanged the power too. Yeah.
Yeah. So everything was powered with these very nice, high quality. Cables from Essential Sound Products. They make a cable called a music cord. And we found that having everything powered with all these very nice cables, the equipment is working at its maximum. And all the equipment just sounds much better than it just, it's everything is just that little bit better. And I think when you hear this recording, especially in 5.1, it sounds glorious. I mean, it's full and rich and also, it's kind of relaxing to listen to, because it's not there's not a lot of tension in the recording, you know.
With all of the work that you two do to engineer, produce, mix, and master a recording, in general, what are your opinions and feelings about the different formats that your work ends up on? Vinyl, CD, and digital.
I'll let Ulrika handle that.
I think if you go in with a very, very high quality master, because we I actually went to the mastering sessions with Bob Ludwig at Gateway Mastering, and we basically made all these different masters coming from the highest resolution we had. And I mean, at home I have, you know, several programs that kind of simulate how it's going to be sounding for streaming, how it's going to be sounding for this and that and the other thing. And the truth is, though, if you come in with this amazing master, it sounds good in every format. I mean, we did two little tweaks, like the CD and the let's say the streaming formats have a little bit of a different mastering than, let's say, the glorious audiophile masters that basically have nothing. They don't have any dynamic compression. They don't have any filtering. They're just the way the mixes are. I mean, there's very, very little detail work that he had to do. And it, I mean, that really speaks for the quality of the recording and the mix. I mean, we tried, I mean, there is the saying, fix it in the mix, which I think is really a dumb thing to say, because if you have to fix it in the mix, then you obviously made mistakes before. And we really tried to go in with everything at the point where we wanted to have it in the recording, so that mixing actually was just a joy. It wasn't fixing anything. It was actually just putting the things where they were supposed to be anyway. And then the same thing for mastering. He didn't have to fix anything because it was there. We spent two very relaxing days. I mean, this whole production was a very relaxing thing because it was just good on all levels. And Bob and I just listened, and we had actually journalists come because we said, oh, we have time for that. Let's have somebody and audition it to the press already. So it, yeah. And then again, coming to all the other formats, now I'm just traveling around and making sure that when it goes on vinyl, when it goes on tape, that it's being kept on that quality. That's why I go to Peekskill a lot at the moment.
Cheryl, you know, Ulrika said tape, and she really means tape. There is going to be a copy of this sold actually on reel-to-reel tape, too.
Coming out in January, I believe?
That is the plan, yes. The first mm-hmm. the first reels are being done as we speak, yes.
And, you know, the one thing, if we can speak a little bit technically, is that, you know, Patricia has a bit of a sibilance in her voice. Her S's can be a little bit sharp. And when we started recording in this high-resolution format, the S that she speaks sometimes can go up to about 125 kilohertz. The system is recording that. But what I found is that I didn't have to, what we would say, DS. Because before, what I was doing, I was hitting the upper upper limit of the recording system. And now with this super high resolution system, that S is recorded to the very top and it doesn't get clipped. And so it's not as sharp. It's actually just all there. And so that's why when Ulrika says we didn't have to do so much, it was the fact that all the texture, all the little nuance was all captured very nicely. And so we didn't have to fix things, like she said, because of the recording format. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of like once you get into the super high resolution, you go, ooh, I really don't want to go back to those other systems.
So you both own and operate Anderson Audio New York in Brooklyn, New York. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. Have you ever had an artist come to you and say, well, you know, I tried to do this and that to this recording at home and it didn't come out well. Can you two fix this for me, please?
We can try. We actually had something very akin to that not long ago. An artist went to Europe and had recorded, and we had spoken with him along the way. And so he was going to make the recording himself and then bring us the tracks, and then we'd mix it here. And so when we got the files here, we put them up, and I said, oh, I can make a very nice, beautiful mix out of this. We sent it to him, and it wasn't what he had conceived. And both Ulrika and I, we went around and we listened to it here on our various systems. I teach at NYU. And I have a very nice system in my office there, and I put it up there, and I finally called her and just said, look, this is a really great mix. It's not what he expected, But it's real, and I had to send him a note and say, look, I'm standing by this mix. If you want to go somewhere else, please go right ahead and do that. But what we've done, I think, is the best that can be done with what you've sent us. And it really, this really is beautiful. And so just kind of forget what you thought and just accept it for what it is. And so it, actually, about a couple of weeks later, he put it away for a moment and then listened to it. And he said, yeah, that is actually very good. We'll go along with it. But there was a bit of a conflict there for a moment. So.
Yeah, I think you had written him the note, and then he came back to me as I was then mastering it and basically said the same thing. And I said, well, here's the thing. If Jim had recorded it the way it should have been recorded, then we could use what you are trying to tell us to get out of it. But there is a way, you know, with distances of microphones to each other and distances of microphones to the instrument that sometimes make it impossible to use something to make it better. It'll just get worse. And I find it, I mean, it is incredible what musicians had to do over the past 2 years, you know, that when they kind of had to set up themselves. And I mean, I've been involved in getting a lot of musicians, and Jane Ira Bloom being one of them, their right setups to do basically these internet recordings, but still have a good quality. And we've improved her system now 2 times, and actually today 2 other little boxes and microphones will come that will improve her system even more. So, I mean, you try to get them on technically on a level that is almost professional, but then there's always still this topic of, where do I put the microphone? And I mean, that's really where the pro and the non-pro meet, because Jim has done it for what, 45 years. I've done it for over 20 years. So it is, at some point, in order to get the sound you want, you need to know where these things are. And you can basically, I mean, they show us photos and basically we see the problem. So the thing is, we said, I know what you want sonically. And Jim said, we know what you want sonically, but it's not what you provided. Just turning up a fader will not get you the result. Usually turning down a different fader is what will happen, make it beautiful. So it was one of those discussions. And I explained it in German, he explained it in English, and finally the musician got it. So, it happens, especially these days. I mean, it happens a lot when people kind of first don't want to spend the money to have the engineer present, and then they finally come to you and you say, well, I can only fix it to that point because it should have been recorded differently.
But, sure. Well, yeah. You know, there's engineers do listen to things differently. In that, what I was hearing and Ulrika heard was what we call comb filtering. So we were hearing certain frequencies were being canceled as I would bring up this microphone with other microphones. And so what that says is, don't use that first microphone because that's causing a distortion. So
it's causing more trouble than it does good, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. And the distortion being it was changing the frequency response that's available. So there are certain cancellations going on. Now, those are the kind of things that we're very aware of and we can hear, but musicians don't hear that. I mean, they'll know something's wrong, but they can't articulate what the problem is. And that's what a good engineer can do, is we can listen to something and say, oh, here's the problem right there. Or at least we can point out a problem.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why in a setup, you know, sometimes, I mean, I've done, my work has predominantly been orchestral. So you have to know in a 60 microphone setup what will cause problems, or what is the instrument that they will later want to hear louder. So you have to have something close, and somebody tells you, but this is a classical recording, the microphones shouldn't be that close, and blah blah blah, whatever. And you say, yes, but you are the same person who will tell me that in bar 351 you want to hear exactly that little pianissimo on that drum. So can I please put the microphone where I know I need the microphone? Mm-hmm. Or it's just a different thing. It looks sometimes to the non-engineer eye, things look maybe strange, but usually with that kind of experience, you know what you have to do.
Yeah. You know, when you think about Jane Ira Bloom, for example, I mean, she knows things about the saxophone just personally and innately that we don't know. I mean, she knows how tight the ligature should be with the reed and all the thing, and where that should be sitting on the cork, and how the pads should feel and all that. And it's sort of that kind of knowledge we have technically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or how she breathes into it for that particular note to mm-hmm. get it. So I mean, yeah, and
that. So we all have a level of expertise, and the fact that maybe a musician can make a recording doesn't make them a recording engineer.
Correct.
You know, and so a friend of mine once said, just because you can hit the red button doesn't make you a recording engineer. And so that's always the issue. You know, we've always said that part of our job is to be able to point out to the client, be it a musician or a producer or somebody, what a problem might be or what an issue might occur if you want to do it this way. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't done that, then you haven't done your job. But the thing is, sometimes that might make a very interesting recording. And so who am I to fight you? You know, I mean, I'll point out saying you might not want to do that because when you get at home, you're going to hear an issue. But, you know, that could, you know, there are some recordings that if they really go whole hog, that's a great sound because it's not right. So technically, you know, if you go back and listen to like the first album of the Bad Plus, it is compressed and it's everything just jam. But you know what? It works for that recording. And but, it, you know, technically, that's not how you'd make a piano trio sound. But in the context of that band and what they were trying to do, that works just fine. For what we're trying to do, we're trying to create really beautiful sounds. And also, at the same time, technically, we're trying to get out of the way. So you aren't really aware of what we're doing. I mean, we are very much in the picture doing things. But you shouldn't, as a listener, understand anything that we're doing. You should just sit there and go, oh, that's great. That's great sounding music. And stop right there. But other engineers will sit there and go, oh, did you hear what they did here? You know, there's little touches that we've done, little tweaks here and there.
I visited the Audio Engineering Society that, Ulrike, I believe you are still a member of, and Jim, you are a past member of?
No, I'm still a member, but I was past president of the organization. Okay. Yeah.
And I was governor, and I was very active in the student things.
But we're both fellows of the society.
Yeah.
Okay. So I went to the website, and under audio topics, there were 23 topics listed, one of them being loudness. Do classical music listeners and jazz and improvised music listeners listen differently to things, and what are they asking for more or less for in sound production?
I think in terms of classical music, it's a very interesting topic who you talk to. Because, for example, if you have the conductor present at the recording and you play him back something that is just minimally, compressed in dynamics, because that's what you would have to do to bring it on the radio. You can't go to the softest pianissimo because nobody will hear it over the air. So you have to have a little bit of compression. And once we played something to a very famous conductor, it was Haitink, Bernhard Haitink. And he said, well, he for him, the pianissimo wasn't soft enough. And he thought he hadn't told the orchestra to play soft enough. And we actually had to tell him, no, this is not what is on the original recording. We had to do this in order for people to actually be able to listen to it. So the musicians want the biggest dynamic range that is possible. But in order to make a commercial product that you can either sell or play over the air, you have to do a little bit of dynamic limitation, because otherwise the soft parts just get too soft. So, I mean, usually in classical music, people will want a little bigger dynamic range, which of course makes it overall a softer experience. While I think in jazz, I mean, it kind of depends on what people want. I mean, for this recording, for the Patricia Barber recording, for example, for CD and streaming, we made the recording a little bit louder. So we actually did some dynamic limitation. So it appears louder because it has to compete to all the other things in streaming and maybe on a CD, while all the formats that are called audiophile, again, they have no dynamic limitation. They are totally uncompressed, and it gets, I mean, you, of course, you have to make the whole thing a little bit louder, but then you get very big, then you get the whole dynamic as it was intended. So I think it's more of, do you need it to compete a little bit with what is on the marketplace? And then we try to do that not too extreme, but to a certain degree. And or is it really for the audiophile listener who basically has maybe even a room dedicated to it and can play as loud, the loud places as loud as he wants or she wants? So I think that's how I experience it.
And, you know, there are some little tweaks that we do that, again, you shouldn't be aware of. If the very opening note of This Town, of the first thing that the album shows you, that bass note has been raised just a little bit to grab your attention, you know. Mm-hmm. So when that first note is played, you kind of sit up and go, oh, we should pay attention to this. And I didn't mix it that way because I didn't know where it was going to come in the sequence. And then when we made the sequence and Ulrika was up at mastering, and she said, this has to, she knows what I'm looking for. So she knew to kind of give that little extra bump to that first couple of notes, just to really kind of set you right. And fortunately, the people that we work with primarily are asking for not a recording that's loud, but a recording that's appropriately loud with the appropriate dynamics. So certainly we're mixing, and you know, when I'm mixing, I'm also very aware of the limitations of various formats. And so, you know, if you think of the average, what was the last figure I heard? The average apartment in New York City, I think the bass level was about 65 dB. So, you know, it's not like a studio here. A good studio might be somewhere around 20 is the bass level, or maybe a little bit less, but not much. And so you've got this, you've got this bass that you kind of have to get over. Now, if you think of a car, what is that, about 80, something like that for the most part? And so a lot of this, if you have too wide of a dynamic range, it's just going to get lost. And then the loud part's going to be too loud because you've kind of turned it up to start with. So, you know, you have to be kind of aware and have to be kind of a realist about how these things are going to play. It's nice to be able to kind of accommodate the audiophiles and really have them appreciate huge wide dynamic ranges. But, you know, when you get to a CD and it's being played, or streamed on the radio or streamed on the web, that, you know, we have to make just a little bit of an accommodation for those things.
For more information, AndersonAudioNY.com.
Trouble is a man, a man who loves me no more, no. Trouble is a man I'll always adore. Nothing good to say about him. Still, I hate a day without him. Why should he have to be?
Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Situation Fluxus takes a break until Thursday, January 20th of next year. Happy holidays and a happy new year to you all. Thank you.
preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.